Oasis Podcast, episode 27, Pete McLeod. Welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, episode 27. It's going to be a shorter episode today with not a huge amount of news because I'm recording this late on Wednesday night. As You Were is officially dropping on Friday night, although I've got it and I'm listening to it, which is great. And we are going to be doing a call-in on Friday. Now, when I say like a call-in or a phone-in, it makes it sound fancy like a TalkSport or Five Live type thing. It's not. As you know, if you listen to this, I'm very technically challenged. So what I'm going to be doing is just making some phone calls or taking phone calls and recording them as we go on Friday night. So if you are listening to this before the evening of Friday, the 6th of October, and you'd like to share your views with me and with the rest of the podcast listeners, then get in touch. Make sure you're following me on Twitter. Or if you're not a Twitter person, sort yourself out. But if you're not, then drop me an email. oasispod@gmail.com, and we can figure out whether it's a Skype or a phone call. We can maybe get you on the air. I'm probably going to be taking calls from about 8:30 on Friday, and I want to try and sort of run through as many people as we can, get loads and loads of different voices on the next episode of the podcast. So, however, I've done an interview with Pete McLeod. Now, Pete is a singer-songwriter. You may well have heard of him. You may well have heard some of his stuff on the radio, or in fact, he's played with some legendary figures in the industry, as you will come to hear in his interview. And he has got a gig coming up in Edinburgh on the 13th of October. And so I wanted to get this out as soon as possible, really. So if you are in and around Edinburgh and you want to get down there, then get down there. If I'd left this till after the As You Were release, which was the plan, then it might not have been in time for that gig. So hence this is out first. So if you're in the area, get out and see him. If you're in Glasgow, there's another gig coming up later in the month in Glasgow, so we talk about it in the episode. But yes, for now then, I'm going to pass over to me talking to Pete McLeod. In the cold of the night, when you're too tired to fight, and your dreams are your own, when you sleep all alone, now it's out of your sight, not afraid of the light, and your fear is your own. So yeah, Pete, thank you very much, and welcome to the Oasis Podcast. So what's going on? What's going on with you at the moment?
I've just been doing an EP tour at the moment with my band, and we played Kirkcaldy there at the weekend in Scotland, and we've got a date in the capital in Edinburgh on the 13th of October at La Belle Angèle, and then probably our final gig this year at Glasgow Classic Grand on the 28th of October with the band. Yeah,
great. So that's the full band one, yeah?
It's me and the band, basically. Looking forward to it. The gigs we've done so far in Manchester, the Clinton was DJing, and it's good to see Clint again.
Yeah.
And what else did we do? We did Greenock. We played Greenock too, which was great. Cumbernauld as well, which was great. So it's just good to play with a band again. I haven't played with a band with my songs for about 4 years, so it's been good to do that. You know, having fun. Oh, wow.
And what about, because you've been playing with Steve Craddock quite a bit, haven't you?
Yeah, Steve joined me for an acoustic tour on February earlier in the year, and basically just played both of my albums, London, Manchester and Glasgow in February, which was a successful tour. It was really good, and it was a good turnout, so it was good to hook up with Steve and do that, you know.
How amazing to play, you know, I don't think Steve gets the credit that he deserves. He's one of the finest guitar players this country's produced in, 25, 30 years, man.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it's not going to be, you know, unusual to the listeners to this podcast who obviously love Britpop and love Ocean Colour Scene. But, you know, as a guitar player, he is right up there in the lines he comes up with and the ideas. And when you look back at things like Riverboat Song and 100 Mile High City, these are phenomenal pieces, you know. And I think if he was an American or something, we'd probably be heralding him. But as he's like a dude from Birmingham, I don't know, I don't think he gets the respect he deserves.
I don't know so much. I think, you know, I would like to class myself as a decent musician too, and the circles that I hang around and the people that I look up to, the people that I've worked with, certainly rate Steve. You know, I don't think he is underestimated. I think he is actually well respected. You know, it's probably, for me anyway, there's the top three in the past 25, 30 years, and it's Johnny Marr, John Squire and Steve Craddock. You know, that's how I see it, and he's in there for me personally. But I mean, yeah, I think that he's I don't think he's underrated. I don't think he'd be Paul Wells' guitarist if he was, you know.
Absolutely. No, that is a very good point. I suppose it's just as a Britpop fan, I'm always sort of on the, you know, you're always sort of defending them against, you know, especially when people who, you know, like a bit too cool for school and they're more into their Radioheads or their unsigned bands that no one's heard of. And it's like, you know, but
he is cool, man. You know, he's cool. And he's one of the people, man. You know what I mean? He's cool. You know, it's what time it is. And I don't think, I think he's a good songwriter too. You know, to come out with good riffs that he's come out with, you know. I don't really see, I mean, obviously Britpop was a name that was made up in the industry, and now we're looking back on all these bands that came out in the 90s, you know, but it was a good decade for guitar-based bands, you know. You know, but I think, you know, he's certainly one of the best guitar players out of all the bands that came out from that era.
But here, plugged in and ready to go, Ocean Colour Scene, the Riverboat Song, the new single, out now!
Absolutely. I mean,
he's phenomenal live, Steve, you know.
Yeah. We did polls on here. We were sort of doing a, on my Twitter, where we sort of chose the best, sort of build a Britpop fantasy band, you know what I mean? And I think obviously it's the Oasis podcast, and Oasis guys ended up filling all the spots, but you know, I think it was Craddock was it, you know, came right down to lead guitar was like credit, you know, just behind Noel basically on lead guitar.
Could you imagine? Here's the thought for you. Could you imagine Steve Craddock was actually a guitar player in Oasis? You know when Oasis got Gem and Andy. Steve could have easily went in there and done an amazing job. Not to say the Gem, you know, and Andy on the bass didn't, you know, because Andy's obviously a terrific guitar player as well, and I'm friends with Andy. You know, he likes my music, and he said a nice quote, you know, a couple of months ago, saying he was a fan of my own music, which is really nice to hear, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think it would have totally been a different sound if Steve was in Oasis, but it's not to say it would have, you know, wouldn't have been better. You know, he's definitely capable of telling his own tunes.
We'll be right back. cool. Well, yeah. And so then you had the so you had this EP out as well. And so that was more like because obviously you had the Rolling Stone, you had the first album, and then you had the Crestfallen album, and then this EP was more of a, because I was a bit confused. I was like, wait, hold on, that's Rolling Stone. That's not, so it was more of a like an introduction to you almost. And
Yeah. I mean, pretty much what had happened was I recorded a couple of other songs that didn't feature on either of the albums, and I didn't think it suited the new record that I recorded with Youth. So, you know, I just, you know, Cherry Red, the record label in London that put the first album out, had suggested, you know, are you interested in putting an EP out digitally? You know, and I said, yeah, why not? You know, and that was the kind of idea, was to introduce, you know, two songs, I think. Yeah, from two songs from the first album, and then it was pretty much one or two songs on the EP. You know, the EP released a couple of months ago, just before the tour. You know, and I've been kind of writing new stuff as well. You know, but yeah, I mean, because the two albums sound, you know, very different, I think musically, that was the mindset for myself to push the boat out a bit for myself with a second record, to not make the same record again. You know, because I think that's fucking boring, man. You know, so I just decided to have a different soundscape around my voice, and working with Youth was great. So it wouldn't have worked putting two songs from each album on the EP.
No.
So it's a couple of songs from the first album and a couple other songs.
Yeah.
That I recorded in those sessions, but I knew myself personally that, you know, musically it wouldn't have fitted on the second record, because I was going for something else on that record specifically.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but that, I mean, I was going to say that. I mean, that the difference between the two records is night and day. It's just,
yeah.
I mean, it's such a, you know, and I think that's such a bold move for you to do that. You know, you think that the success you'd had in the first album, you think, all right, well, let's just, you know, do that again and capitalize on it, which so many bands and artists do on their second album.
Yeah.
And yet, yeah, it's so different. Like the obviously it's Youth's production, and it's sort of got this melancholic, I mean, number one, it's called Crestfallen, and there is this sort of melancholy air throughout it, of these sort of synths.
Yep.
And, you know, it was just so different from like that chiming kind of birdsy mid-60s kind of feel that,
yep,
that goes through a lot of the first album. And then it's like, wow, who's this? This is a completely different, you know, and they're both great in their own different ways, but it's just such a surprise. But I mean, was that youth coming in, or where did that sound come from?
I said to Alan McGee that that's what I wanted to do, and it's a compliment, obviously, for you saying that, you know, it was a brave move, because at the end of the day, like David Bowie once said, you know, like, you know, never play to basically what everyone else is wanting you to do, you know, just be an artist and do what you want to do. And that kind of balletic music, you know, it's a sound that I listen to when I go up in the morning. You know, I'll just put a chilled out soundtrack on. And when it's summer, obviously, you know, I like to kind of chill out. I mean, the 60s influence was something that was a big part of my influence growing up, and being just, you know, a young music fan. And I'm still just now, I listen to basically pretty much everything anyway. I don't listen to the same stuff every day, you know. Every other day I'll obviously listen to songs that I like, but, you know, I'm always looking for new sounds and always trying to push that out, you know, because I think we live in I certainly live in an age now where, you know, it's a lot more accessible to listen to new sounds, to new music, and actually try and, you know, emphasise that in your own creative talent, if you like, you know.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, absolutely two different records, and that, I mean, that's what Andy Bell had said, you know, like, two great records that I've made, and very, you know, very different, but great, you know, because the songwriting's still there, and the voice, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to make another record, or and what sound that's going to be, if it's going to be more of the same, or a totally different record. It's interesting, you know, I think it's, I think that's just the way I am. I'm not playing. Then you've got Noel's new record, you know. Now Noel's, obviously, you know, his first two solo records weren't too far away from Oasis, you know, with all due respect, you know, as an Oasis fan and as a Noel and Liam fan, you know, I would say that as a music fan. But the third record, you know, that he's been working on with David Holmes, who, again, is not too far away from a producer like Youth. He's down now, he's testing new territory in terms of making an album like that. And you know, he might lose some fans, he might not, he might gain some new fans. But I think if Noel came out with a record like that, it's his first solo record, you know, it would have been a big risk, you know. Yeah. His second record, it would have still been a big risk, but the third record, it's not much of a risk. It's more safer now for him to do that as an artist, to experiment with that, you know. And yeah, you know, all power to him, you know, to whatever you do it on your first, second or third record, to still do that, to possibly scare a big fan base. But I don't think that's even possible, you know, Liam, to be honest. I think they could release an album with 45 minutes of silence, and it would still go down well with all the fans, you know.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree. I agree. It's sort of you know, Liam's hero John Lennon tried that with like Life on the Lions, and what the other one with the Two Virgins as well, didn't he? But yeah, if Liam turns up on the next one naked and just doing bizarre sounds, then we'll know he's really gone down the Lennon path. So that's cool that you've I mean, that trailer that they kind of put out, which is a bit weird thing for Noel to do. It was like an album, you know, you sort of, oh, is it going to be a single? And it's like, oh no, it's an album trailer. You know what I mean? Like a movie trailer. That was bizarre. Did you catch that?
Yeah, well, David Holmes does soundtracks for lots of movies and stuff like that. Mm. So I think obviously in the '90s and stuff like that, you could see that Noel was capable with that with the artists he worked with. You know, I mean, he even worked with Goldie, didn't he?
Yeah,
you know?
Goldie, Chemical Brothers. Yeah.
I mean, obviously Chemical Brothers goes without saying. Mm. But then again, you had Liam working with, was it Scorpio Rising, that
yeah,
song?
Yeah, Death in Vegas, right? Yeah.
Yeah, man, you know, so I think you've got a great voice, Liam. You know, I personally think you should work with people that, you know, are a bit more out there. You know, like obviously James Lavelle, working with Richard Ashcroft, Tom York. Mm. I mean, all these things, man, you know, that's the way I look at music. I look at music like there should be a lot more collaborations, and I think we've seen a lot more of that over the past 10 years or so, but
yeah,
why not, man? You know, I think that's a good thing. I think it's a positive thing for music. Yeah. There's so much different genres now that didn't exist in the fucking 60s and the 70s, man. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. I remember a few years ago, I was like, you know, doing that sort of end of year thing where you look back at your favourite albums of the year. And my favourite albums of the year were like the Gorillaz album and the Mark Ronson album. And it's like, well, yeah, that's two albums that are just kind of sum up what music is now often. Is it just this complete mismatch of mix up of different artists and, you know, guests on each other's records. And, you know, you couldn't, the Gorillaz album is just all over the place, but it's they're often brilliant, you know. So it's it is good that I do like that spirit of collaboration that we're seeing a lot more in bands now.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, it's not even too far away from what I would listen to myself, and, you know, enjoying a night out with my mates, and even going to some house music and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, I can sit and listen to someone's acoustic record and go and see someone play that live and enjoy the night. And I can also, you know, go out with my mates and pretty much get on it and have a good night with beats as well, you know. So I mean, even reggae, everything, man. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why there has to be a certain boundary when you know, someone's classing you as a mod or a rocker. It's like fuck off, man. Do you know what I mean? I don't need a fucking tag to actually be appreciated, to have a couple of years to pick up tunes, man. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. No, spot on, man. But so what about you growing up? I mean, what music was it that really turned you on when you were a kid?
What music that turned me on when I was a kid was probably the first porn movie I watched. But apart from that, I think, you know, a lot of 60s stuff, the Stones were great. I mean, I basically pretty much took my music taste for records that my dad listened to, you know, vinyl and CDs that he listened to, which is the Stones, the Beatles, even Roy Orbison, Buddy Holly was the first album that I bought, you know, myself. So all his influences, the 60s to the 70s, and then growing up with two sisters through the 80s, You know, it went from everything, man. I mean, 80s basically became dance, you know.
Yeah.
So pretty much all that from the 80s. And then I became myself in the 90s and listened to the guitar-based bands that major record labels were given a chance to, you know, for people to hear. And then from then, I think there's, looking back, man, you know, like, there was a kind of weird thing that happened in, after the 90s. And I think kind of music disappeared a little bit, man. The guitar, bass, band. I don't know, man. It's kind of, it was a bit weird. And I think even Little Oasis, kind of, you know what I mean? There's just a mad 10 years for that. I thought, you know, there wasn't really, you know. Just, I mean, that's probably made me pick up my own guitar and write for myself, because what I was maybe hearing wasn't inspiring me so much. So I inspired myself by writing my own stuff.
Yeah. You know? And how come was it, how come it's, you as a solo artist, did you, were you in bands, and or was it always?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't that obnoxious or confident to go out as a solo artist when I was 15 or 16, you know. But right, you know, the first gig I done, you know, I had a band, and the band was called Pete. They put it down as Pete, you know, with like, what's the band name, and someone just said it's Pete. That was the first gig. My mate was showing me that the other day at school. The gig was at school, and he showed me the video on VHS. His dad had filmed it, but I had a band, a couple of bands, man, just try to get something going, as you do as a teenager. And I called the band Star 69, and I kind of went under the moniker of that. And then I pretty much realised, you know, this is all my own stuff. I'm pretty much doing this all myself, so I should just not be hiding behind this band name, and just be humble about it. And just call myself Pete McLeod and put myself out there, is because that's not going to change. I'm who I am.
And like, you know, one of my favourite all-time artists is Billy Bragg.
I was just talking to him today. Actually, do you know who I was talking to? I was talking about Billy Bragg today. I don't mean to name drop it. It's just fucking my life, man. These are people I talk to. But Bonehead was texting me today, and we were having a lengthy conversation about different stuff, and we're actually talking about Billy Bragg. That's funny.
If you were lonely, I will call. If you were poorly, I will sing poetry.
Oh no! Well, I love Billy Bragg. He's one of my my heroes, and the fact that he, as I say, he did the same thing. He was like, no, I'm just going to do it myself, and you know, and literally turning up with his amp and an electric guitar, and this in the mid '80s as well, when everyone else is on synths and whatever else, and he's turning up and just plonks down the amp and just belts it out, and you think, you know, that's it, isn't it? That's you know,
it's punk and all, man, isn't it? It's punk in a movement, and it's obviously political. But see, when you watch those bands, even say like the 70s and stuff like that, man, see, the best thing I've ever watched in my life, you know, for people I've never heard before, or even growing up as a teenager or in my 20s as well, the best programme that inspired me in obscure fucking bands when I was like, what the fuck is that? That's brilliant, man, was the Old Grey Whistle Test. Absolutely phenomenal, man.
Yeah.
You know? You know, and I was hooked on that, man, you know, and it's brilliant, man, you know. It's getting Billy Bragg was on it too, you know, and he's got that, there's a punk thing. Obviously we kicked off with him too, man, you know, but there's a substance, you know, there with political movement from
absolutely.
Himself too, as an artist, you know.
Yeah, no, it's great. And but it's just that thing of like, no, I'm just gonna, you know, devote myself to this, you know, I'm just going to go out there and do it. I mean, and was that hard sort of, I know that I was actually listening to you on the, well, what's now called the Britpop Revival show, which is the, I think you did a couple of years ago, It's a show I've gone on as well. And you were talking at the time, I think the album had just, the first album had just come out, and you were sort of saying about you just got your barber's license at the time and things like that as well, which is cool. And what I like about doing this podcast is, you know, I was talking to Tom Hingley from the Inspiral Carpets, and he was saying about how he got, you know, when the Inspiral split up, he went and worked in a call centre for a year, you know.
Yeah.
And NME don't talk about that. You know, that was growing up, you would just hear these bands talking about their influences and stuff. And it's like, there was never any reality. And I was in a band, you know, we never did anything, but you know, you're wondering about, all these guys, they must be all like living in mansions and stuff. It's like, well, no, most of them were probably just still living at home with their folks and having to work in call centers or whatever. But you know, and it's that it's been really interesting doing this, just the reality of, I do have to do a day job as well, because this is what we got to do. You know, I mean, and do you find that hard to balance the you know, making a living with following what you want to do?
Well, I mean, I haven't actually pursued the barber career, because I spend every day on my music, whether it's dealing with anything, really. You know, I'm pretty much managing myself as well, and, you know, yeah, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, I see myself as a musician, you know, so I can't do it part-time. But I think it gets to a point, man. I've been thinking about this over the past few years as well. I never really bothered about it, you know, in my 20s as a musician, because I was like, this is what I do, man. You know, I did have a job right enough then, but I was like, well, this is what I'm going to do anyway, so it doesn't really matter. I believed in myself that much that whatever it takes, you know, even if I'm, whatever money I'm making a week, this is what I want to do, this is my passion, this is my calling. And I'm making that decision, it doesn't really matter. So it's up to me, the initiative is up to me to do what it takes, man, you know, within reason. But I think what was my point really there was, I think it gets to a point where you don't really decide to a certain point. Other people decide if they like you or not.
Yeah.
And that dictates where you're going to have, you know, a career, short term or long term. You know, you can't force people to like you, man. They're going to like you or they're not.
Mm.
Or you can force it and just get yourself out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, you being realistic, as you say, it's going to hit you at some point anyway, man.
And you were very lucky in that one of the, well, it's not luck, it's down to your talent, but the fact that Alan McGee was one of those people that liked you, and he's, you know, coming at a time when he'd been away from the music industry for so long, and I think you were the first act signed to 359 when he came back with that after the Pop Tones.
Yeah, it was one of six. The 359 put out in the batch, man, of artists, of hopefuls, you know. And he gave six people a chance, man, you know, and like he's gave many people a chance, man, you know. So it was just great. I was grateful and humble to be part of that, for Alan to believe in me that much, to actually sign me and put a record out. And then obviously, you know, further down the line, he believed in me that much, he pretty much took me in the studio with Youth to do a second record as well, it was great for him too to do that, you know, because at the end of the day, Alan funded that record as well, man.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So, a lot of respect for Alan, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm so pleased to see him back now with all the creation management stuff, the fact he's getting all these fantastic bands that you know, some of them, you know, like Black Grape being back out there, and it's fantastic. Yep. It's so good having all these bands out there. And Alan's, I don't know if people realise that Alan's behind a lot of them coming back into the mainstream, and he's so busy now. I mean, I've had, you know, messages back and forth with him about sort of, and he's said he's happy to come on and do the podcast, but, you know, but it's just like, you know, he's in Thailand or he's in wherever he is. It's like,
he's,
you know, it's just pinning him down.
He's a busy guy, man, you know. But I mean, I was talking to Alan, actually talked to him this morning too. I was talking to him through the week as well, over the weekend. I mean, life's for living, man, while you're here, you know, and Alan truly believes in that. I think there was a moment where he was kind of like, the fuck am I doing, man? This is what I do. You know, and there you go, man. He's doing it, man. You know, there's no point in sitting pondering over things and you know, not being happy, man. You know, Alan's got a great talent and a good ear, you know, and he's obviously a great manager as well. You know, he's looking after Sean Ryder and John Power and the Reed Brothers and Eddie Chain and yeah, man, he's a good manager and he's a good guy.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's it, isn't he? He's a, you know, what it must be great for you to have him there is like just to, if you've got any questions or you need some, you know, just as advice as someone who's been through it. You know, people talk about the Oasis days, but he'd been around for, you know, 10 years before that, or even more, you know, from, yeah. I mean, in bands himself as well, you know. And, you know, what a font of knowledge. Is that, you know, is that what, you know, he's on the other end of the phone for you if you, you know, when you need him, ask questions and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much because he's such a good guy as well, you know, and yeah, he's, if I text him or email him or anything, or give him a call, you know, I pick up the phone or he'll respond to text, or when he's up in Glasgow, maybe I'll see him, or if I'm maybe I'm down as when he's about, you know, yeah, it's good to see that. I think Alan was always going to be in a position where he was managing people like Sean Ryder anyway.
Yeah.
You know, these pioneers pretty much of a generation, man. Mm. You know, and it's good. Mm. Music, that's what music is. It's a powerful thing, man. You know, it's a spiritual thing, I feel like. You know, it's it has healing powers, man, and it's a great thing to depart to. It doesn't matter what age you are, or doesn't matter what kind of music you're into, man. At least you're doing it, man. You know?
Absolutely. No, that's great. And what do you think? Do you believe the story about him never hearing Oasis before and signing them in King Tut's? People have said, well, hold on a minute, you know, Metal Arc 5 were a creation band. They used to play at the Boardwalk. You know, I'm sure he will have seen them beforehand. What do you think? Have you got any insider knowledge you can give us, Pete?
Well, I think when you get him on your show, you can ask him that. So the story, I wasn't there. I'm not Alan, I can't answer for Alan, but all I can say is it's definitely believable what happened, and I think there's footage online of Oasis playing that night, and I know Alan's sister, Susan, that was there that night, and her friend, who was there that night too, and it's all, yeah, man, I think there's a conspiracy for everything in this planet now, man, do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's a conspiracy that we're having this fucking conversation, do you know what I mean?
Well, you know what? Yesterday I had, so there was on Twitter, there was a guy pretending to be Lennon Gallagher. And but it seemed pretty genuine, and kind of quite a few people were coming and saying, oh, is this the real guy? And you know, he looked pretty genuine. I thought he was. I sort of had retweeted a couple of things he'd said, and we thought, oh, cool, Lennon Gallagher's on. And you're just thinking, nah, I don't. And so actually, I dropped Lennon Gallagher a message on Instagram, and that's definitely him because it's verified. And you know, he was good enough to come back and say, oh, no, that's not me. And I said, well, look, are you all right? Shall I just go and, you know, screenshot this message to tell everyone to stop following this fake? And he's like, yeah, go ahead. And so I did. And then the guy then turns his avatar picture away from Lennon into a picture of Donald Trump. And then he had a go at me and said, like, oh, you're so pathetic. Like, you love Lennon Gallagher. I mean, you had pretended to be him, you dickhead. Like, why? You know.
Maybe it actually is the real Donald Trump then, man.
Maybe it was. That might be it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But anyway.
It's Donald Trump, man. You've trumped him, man.
But it's just so bizarre. You think, why would someone bother, you know, online? Like, you, that's what I was saying about conspiracy. Why would someone be that bothered about trying pretending to be someone? But anyway. No, but anyway, that's another story. But one of the things I was just going to touch upon is that you mentioned Bonehead there. You mentioned Andy Bell. I mean, what was your first sort of encounter with kind of, you know, with one of the Oasis guys?
Bonehead. Well, I was living in LA at the time. I just got married and I had to be boys. And so I was kind of out there, and excuse me, the MySpace days existed pretty much back then, man. And in Ireland. Yeah, I kind of liked a few of my songs that was on the MySpace player, and they sent them to Bonehead and said, so there's this Glaswegian songwriter that's kind of in LA just now, and, you know, I think you'd like his music, what do you think? And they sent Bonehead it, and Bonehead was like, yeah, I love it, it's great. You know, and then Alan told me that, and I was like, oh, cool, man. I was coming out for a tour of the Ocean Colour Scene. I flew out and done that, and then went back to Santa Monica, went back there where I lived at the time. And then, you know, me and Bonehead kind of started talking, and I was like, oh, yeah, man. And then we were thinking about, maybe let's go and do a couple of gigs in the UK, and he was like, right, cool, let's do it, you know. And then one gig turned into two, two turned into four, and then I ended up doing about 10 dates or something, Scotland, England and Ireland.
I'm Pete McLeod, this is Bonehead, and the song's called Rolling Stone.
What more kill you? It only makes you stronger now. You have learned that the tide is turned for you. So turn the page and draw a line. It's what you have, you know that you hold. I was a rolling stone, 'cause everywhere would be my home. And far away from here, and far away from the known.
And then yeah, pretty much for that, and then we did a couple of gigs after that, I think. And since then we've been pretty much mates. I mean, it was nice, it was really nice of Bonehead to give me his time and to do that with me and believe in me that way, you know. It was really, really humbled by that too. And then he took me to meet Noel as well when they played up here in Glasgow. And High Flying Birds were kind of doing their first tour. I went in the dressing room and met Noel and had a chat with him, and Noel asked me if Alan McGee was going to sign me, and at that time I didn't know, and, you know, and obviously did a year down the line, Alan did sign me, and then became a manager too. But I mean, that was great, you know, sitting at Bonehead watching that gig, and you know, and Noel dedicating a song to him, and, you know, Bonehead came up and stayed in my flat for the week, and we just kind of hung out. He was a good guy too, man, you know. Wow. And good times, man, you know, good times.
I mean, people always talk about him like because he was, you know, people talk about Liam being the Hellraiser, but by all accounts, Bonehead was the true Hellraiser in Oasis. I mean, what's he, has he calmed down a lot now, or can he still have a drink?
Well, that was a few years ago, so we did have a good few drinks on the tour, and we had a bit of a laugh, you know. But now, I think Bonehead's chilled out now, he's more chilled out, whereas, like, I've still got a few more years left.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think he's just really chilled out now, and he doesn't really, I don't think he drinks that much now, but, you know.
But fair enough. All right. And what about that meeting with Noel then? Have you met Noel other times, or is it just that one time?
Yeah, I've met Noel two or three times after that, and I'm supposed to go to the party that he had for that, the tour before that one. It was in London. Noel's put me on the guest list for a lot of his gigs, you know, which has been lovely, man, you know. And I went down a bit. I couldn't go to the party. I met Serge for Cassidy, and there was Gordon Smart was there, and they were asking how he'd come back to the party. But I had a gig the next day in Islington in London. And I knew if I went to that party, I fucking wouldn't have made the gig. Do you know what I mean?
And they were like,
you know, what are you going to do? And I'm like, oh, I can't go, man. I need to go back. So I sat in this wee room and done nothing, because I knew I couldn't have trusted myself, because it looked like it was going to be a bit of a party, you know.
I commend your professionalism, but I damn your judgment, because you've got to go to that party, right?
It was the Abbey and that. Yeah, it would probably been a night. I'd have made that a good party anyway, that's for sure. Do you know what I mean? But I'd done the right thing that night, and I think just kind of chilled out and did the gig next night. You know, when I don't know how many we played to. It was only a couple of hundred, but it was a couple of hundred people that turned up to come and see me play, you know. So I like to look after my voice when I've got a gig, you know.
Yeah,
professionalism and respect and all that jazz. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, that's great. And the voice. I mean, I was just going to talk about your voice because I can hear. I mean, I don't know, you know, which singers it was that particularly inspired you, or whatever. But what I can hear in your voice is that there's the attitude there. You've got the attitude in your voice, even if you're singing. It's like, you know, obviously this is the Oasis podcast, similar to Liam in that way that you might be singing quite a gentle song, but if the line's ending with you don't just go you go you, you know. There's definitely that in there's that passion and extra, just that little bit of aggression in your voice that you think, yes, that's what we want.
Yeah, well, I think probably John Lennon did that too.
Yeah.
And John Lydon was probably John Lydon's probably the singer that pretty much did that.
Yeah,
there's an attitude, isn't it? You know, but his passion as well. I mean, there's loads of singers out there. I think there's more great singers out there in the world than there is songwriters. You know.
Agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Excuse me, but I think that's just me, man. It's just that's how I sing, you know. It's obviously I've listened to a lot of music and vocals, and there's, you know, Alan used to say that to me too, like you've kind of morphed into your own, and you did that a good few years ago, you know, all these influences around you, and you've kind of morphed into your own, which is what music's about, man, isn't it? You know, you inspire people around you, and, you know, it's all good.
No, that's spot on. So what about, I mean, as a, you know, you talk about growing up and listening to music and stuff, but what bands was it? Were Oasis one of those bands, or like The Verve with, you know, with the youth connection? Were they part of your kind of, your sort of scene that were big for you, or is there any other that was, I'm thinking like, you know, a lot of people have got their kind of year zero, right? So like, you know, if some people it was hearing the Pistols for the first time, or definitely maybe for the first time, or whatever, that was their like, right, this is it for me now. Did you have kind of one of those moments, or?
Well, what I had was, as I said, all my dad's records and you know, his listening taste, that was kind of installed me in me, so the 60s, 70s, and then the Sisters, growing up with them and listening to fucking Madonna or whatever, just everything today is going in my head as well.
Mm.
And then the 90s, I suddenly, you know, became, you know, me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, all these bands were coming out in the 90s. I always remember watching, I think it was The Box, it was on TV, cable TV, and I always remember the Sex Pistols playing Pretty Vacant, I think it was, and I was like, what the fuck is that, man, you know, and it was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that, that attitude, man, you know. This kind of happened just before Definitely Maybe came out anyway, and then Kurt Cobain, Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit, I was like, fuck it, hell, man, that's great. I mean, I was only 14 at the time, you know what I mean? So, and obviously, as music and, you know, Nirvana, and I've met Dave Grohl a couple of times too, he's a lovely guy, but so I'd say probably that attitude in front of a camera.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know, it's like that. It's, when you're 14 years old, I'm looking at that thinking, they're speaking to me, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's how I felt. You know, you don't think it's a video, it's a video shoot. And the dramatic of the song is, you know, they're pretty much acting in front of the camera, man. Yeah. It is a show, you know what I mean? And but they certainly can, if you do it right, you can speak to culture, you can speak to kids, man. You know what I mean? And that's what I got from that. And then, you know, Oasis, Definitely Maybe came out, and The Verve, Radiohead was the first gig I went to.
Oh, wow.
The Pablo Honey tour. I never got to see it because my mate got chucked out and flung down the stairs, and so I just left instead of staying for the gig, man. So I never seen that gig. But I think we were spoiled for choice, man. The 90s cast as well. Fucking love cast. Cast were probably the most band I ever went to see at that time. Yeah. And I've played a couple of gigs now with cast as well, and they're lovely, man. There's so much. I think we were really spoiled. And definitely on the Ocean Colour scene as well, obviously. All bands that are actually, they're still going, man. They're still doing it.
Still doing it. And I mean, especially with the Scottish connection as well, you've got so many great bands that came out of Scotland, whether, you know, Primal Scream are just, you know, legendary. And then even like Travis are fantastic. And even there's bands that had their moment and gone away. Remember a Mull Historical Society?
Yeah,
and they were great. And I think, you know, there's so many of... what I find is interesting as well. You know, you've got, like, a lot of Scottish bands that end up having this, like, similar to your first stuff, like this sort of jangly, very bright, chimey, if it's Rickenbackers, but that sort of sound. And, like, Primal Scream early days had that, and Travis have had that and things. And it's like... And yet...
Telecaster, man, it's the Telecaster.
Is it the Telecaster, is it?
That's a secret weapon, man.
Is it? But it's like you come from a place where you haven't got a huge amount of sunshine. So is it like you kind of need to make your own sunshine with the music?
Teenage fan club.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, is that it? Is that you've got to generate your own sort of sun lamp with your music?
I don't know. I mean, teenage fan club. A lot of these people, you know, a lot of these musicians and artists lived in California or spent some time in California, and I think I lived there for 5 years too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It kind of rubs off on you, man. You know, you look up and it's the blue sky instead of fucking dark and grey and shit. You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, for any artist, you know, if you, I kind of have to be inspired. You know, inspiration motivates me to do most things in my life. If I'm not inspired, I just fucking won't do anything. I need to believe in something, you know what I mean? And I don't try and force that, you know? And I think that all those bands, you know, most of them kind of, maybe have spent their life, I can only speak from my own experience, but living in a country that's a great country and great people, and, you know, but the weather lets us down. So when you kind of are sitting around, you know, and these blue skies and the sunshine, man, you know, it can maybe bring out the best in you, man. You know, in terms of being creative, you know, and I think that comes off on my first record anyway. I definitely think I believe in that, man. You know what I mean?
No, definitely. The only other one I wanted to touch on, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, but just to, what about Andy then? Andy Bell? How did sort of meeting him come about?
Well, I spoke to Andy. Andy put me on the guest list for a couple of gigs in the past, BDI and stuff like that, you know, and Ride. When Ride got back together anyway recently. So yeah, pretty much, man. Just a cool guy, man. You know, and a great musician as well.
Yeah.
I'd asked Andy if he would be interested in maybe working with me in the future and playing guitar with me, and he said yes. But obviously, Ride got back together. He's busy with that, man. You know, you know, maybe down the line, I'll work with Andy in the future and collaborate and do some stuff too. That'd be good, man. You know,
that'd be fantastic.
The more the merrier, the way I look at it. You know, I've been on stage now, been joined on stage now with, like, Boneheads, Steve Craddock, Rab Allen from Las Vegas, Josh McClory, the Stripes. You know, there's a few people that I've played with now on stage, and Paul McCartney's son James plays on the new record.
Yeah, I was going to say about that. That's fantastic to get James on.
Simon Tong from is on the record too, and
Steve
White plays drums on the first record.
I suppose that's a nice thing about being the solo artist, I suppose, is that you're not tied into having that you've got to play with the same four guys, and if you don't, then there's going to be you know, all kinds
I've
of arguments.
Said that. You know, I've always said that, man. I've always, that's why, you know, I decided, you know, this is going to be me. I put my name to it, and so it gives me the freedom to do and work with who I want if they want to work with me. And I see myself as, I've always seen myself as that, as a writer and a performer that way. I'm in the studio, and I think I don't have to be tied. That goes for the sound as well, and that was me proving my point, even for myself as a writer for the second record, where I don't have to be tied into a specific type of genre.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be Pete McLeod, I can do what I want, man, you know. I may not have a huge career, or I may not have millions of fans for doing that, you know, but at least I'm being true to myself, man, and doing what I want to do, you know what I mean?
Well, absolutely. When your kids are old and you play them your albums, and you'll have a body of work behind you that's like, yeah, that you can be proud of, and that you knew you did it for your own reasons and not just because the record company wanted something else that the same, you know? But no,
I don't think, you know, I was ever going to be that kind of person anyway, man. You know, I don't think that suits me anyway. It's not me to do what people tell me to do that way, you know. Otherwise, I just wouldn't do it. You know, I'm not, you know what I mean, I'm not a puppet on a string, man. I've never have been, you know what I mean? I've never really been like that anyway, man, through my childhood, so I'm not going to be like that through my adulthood, you know what I mean?
No, fair play. And what about Liam? Have you met Liam? Have you had much to do with Liam before?
I've spoken to him on the phone a couple of times, man. He was going to see Stone Roses in Dubai with Bonehead, and I think I'm a fan of both, Liam. You know, so there's not really, it's not really a problem for me that they're both bringing out solo records and both doing their own thing, man. I think it's entirely up to them what they want to do. And as I said before, you know, they'll be any successful whatever they do, man. Basically, yeah. You know?
Well, I saw a brilliant tweet. I can't remember who said it, but they said, having Liam and Noel separate like this is like, it's like your parents splitting up. It's very sad, but you get two sets of presents. Great, you know, and that's it, because we're going to have, in the space of a couple of months, we're going to have two effectively Oasis albums, you know, it's similar to they're not Lennon McCartney, but that the frustration with the Lennon and McCartney in the 70s is that you just think, oh, if only they'd been together, what they could have done, you know.
I think they were together and they did a lot together. And I mean, Liam was very young when Oasis, you know, were at the height of their musical, you know, journey. But I think both. I don't think the both of them would. I mean, obviously, did the Supersonic film and stuff like that, and that probably was very nostalgic for the both of them, you know. And you know, it's a great thing they've done, man. They've done more good than bad in this world, anyway. That's for sure. You know what I mean? It's just obviously, you know, two brothers. It's difficult, man. You know, and it's really their business too, man. You know, and everyone kind of knows about your business in the public.
Yeah.
I fucking hate that, man, personally, myself, man, you know. But power to them, man, you know, power to the both of them, and, you know, as long as they're, you know, happy, man.
Yeah.
Same for anybody, man, same for anybody. I like to see people do well, man, in general, you know.
Absolutely, you know, it's like,
for a good thing.
Yeah, I don't want either, you know, and it sort of surprises me when you get people on online who kind of favour one or the other. It's like, well, look, you might have a preference for one or the other, but if you're an Oasis fan, you know, you want to see them both do well. I mean, as I say, I want to see Andy Bell do well. I want to see Zach Starkey do well, because these guys have all played a role in my favourite band. So
it's healthy.
Exactly. You want them to do well because they've brought something to your life. I don't want, it's like with, you know, in the movies, it's like, you know, you can't, oh, you're a Marvel or a DC fan. It's like, well, it doesn't matter. If you just want to see good films, you know what I mean? You just want to see good films, and that's
people, it. People are people though, man, you know. People can take a dislike to somebody and they're not even fucking open their mouth, man, you know what I mean? People get prejudiced towards, you know, we're living in a fucking world, man, where it's just like, you know, you don't even know what's going on in people's minds, man, you know, and people can be quite vicious that way, man, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, chill out, you know, we're here for a good time, not a long time, man. I just don't understand, you know, why people would fucking cross the street to fucking be in somebody's face, man. I just don't get it.
Don't get it at all. No.
So I get a grip, you know what I mean? But then I'm a dad, I've had kids, man, you know, and that you kind of realise how important life can be, man. How life is, man, and how fickle people can be too, but it's just peace and love, man.
And peace and love. I love it. Right. So where are we? So you've got so Crestfallen's been out a little while, and you've been doing this tour for the EP. So what's next? Is it going to be a bit more touring than writing the next album?
I don't know yet. I mean, I'll do these two gigs I've got coming up. I'm really looking forward to playing Edinburgh. I've not played in Edinburgh since I played, since I supported Cast, and then before that I supported Jesus and Mary Chain. So I've not really played, I've not played Edinburgh since then, and that's been a couple of years. So I'm looking forward to headlining my own gig there with the band, man. I like playing acoustic too, man, you know, I do enjoy doing that, you know, but sometimes I think it's only worthwhile playing acoustic if people are listening to you, what you're doing, you know. Yeah. So just kind of pretty much, I kind of sing quite loud anyway, and kind of, it's quite, so I'm told anyway, it's powerful anyway, it comes through the PA, but if I'm doing acoustic gigs, I like people to sit down and kind of get it, or even fucking stand and get it, but talking over people when they're playing, I just think it's a fucking point, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so I'm looking forward to playing with a band in Edinburgh, and then the Glasgow gig on the 28th of October is going to be really good. Usually the Glasgow gigs are a wee extra bit special, man, you know. So I'll do the gigs, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I don't know yet. I've not thought about 2018 yet, you know. I'm just thinking about pretty much the night and the morrow and these gigs. That's where my head's at, you know.
Fair play, man. Well, it's been really good to speak to you, and I've really enjoyed your stuff. And I say that's the main thing for me, is just the way that you've been able to change, and I just really look forward to what the next direction is going to be once you've figured it out, because who knows?
Let's see, man. You know, maybe I'll never figure it out. Who knows? But it's been a pleasure talking to you too. Let me know if I'm down in your area anytime in the future, and I'll put you on the guest list.
Well, I appreciate that, mate. I appreciate it. I'm sort of Oxford Reading way, so even London is easy enough for me. Fine. Cool. Well, we always finish with an Oasis song. So, is there an Oasis song that particularly means a lot to you that you'd like to play out with?
Oasis song that means us a lot. There is a lot. One song in particular, I always remember. Just kind of, I lived in a loft. In my mum and dad's house at the time, and my dad converted the loft for me, and it's just a small little room, and I always used to play Rocking Chair really fucking loud, man, you know. So that song for me, that memory will always stick in my head, and then umpteen nights after, just getting drunk and hanging out with my mates, you know. So Rocking Chair is a special song for me, man, you know.
And you know what, as you get older, it's more powerful, I think, that song.
Yeah.
You know, and the mad thing when you've got, like, Noel, when he wrote it was, what, you know, 24, and yeah, it's written like an old soul, you know. It's unbelievable what a piece of music that is.
That's what he was, though, isn't he? Any writer, man, at that age, it's coming out of that. I mean, I don't believe he, you know, maybe, I don't know if he co-wrote that with the Griffiths.
He did, yeah. That's one of the only things that the Griffiths got a co-write for. But
it certainly worked, man. It certainly worked. But I think there's so many, man. You know, like, I like Talk to Me Too, but I like Pass Me Down the Wine, man, which is more. You know, yeah, like something marching about that, man, and an action that just comes right out of that too. But I mean, I think I'd have to go away what's fashionable now, which is a wee bit of nostalgia, which would be Rocking Chair, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. Well, we'll play it with Rocking Chair, but Pete, really enjoyed speaking to you, buddy. I do really appreciate your time, and and if anyone listening's around in Edinburgh and Glasgow, then get on it and get and see Pete play with the band, because you might not see it again for a little while.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate that. Cool. And peace and love to everyone, man, and just watch yourselves out there.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Cheers, Pete. All the best, buddy.
Thank you, man. Take it easy.
Thanks, Blake.
I feel alone, sitting here by the fire.
So I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Pete, what top man. And yeah, as I say, definitely check out his albums on Spotify. And if you can catch him live, then make sure you do so. So last thing before I curtail this slightly shorter episode, we've had another couple of iTunes reviews come in. And as we say, we always like to read those. So Iverson Guitar says, a must for any Oasis stroke Britpop fan. Really enjoyable podcast talking about Oasis plus other bands surrounding the Britpop era. Nice host with his own opinions, but also an open mind. Thanks very much. And the soundtrack to my life. This is by Clarky18. A brilliant recount of a snippet of the best band in my lifetime. The host is obviously a fan, but not as obsessed as others, myself included. But this stops it descending into fanboy gushing. And forgiving his apathy to the later output has hit upon something wonderful. Now about Dig Out Your Soul. I think that might have related to some discussions on Twitter about Dig Out Your Soul. I am a fan of the later Oasis stuff, just not as much as the 94 to 97 stuff, but there you go. And we've had a review on the American iTunes site. It says, amazing, insightful podcast with great interviews, lots of new, interesting, entertaining information with each episode. The host does a fantastic job of getting awesome guests, some very close to the band, and having personal, relaxed conversations with them about Oasis or any 90s-related stuff. I love the segments on recent Gallagher Brothers stroke Oasis news, as well as the great nostalgic parts too. And that's by MusicLover757. So thank you so much for that. And so it just remains for me to say thanks for listening to the Oasis podcast. And of course, special thanks go to our patrons, Casey, David, Fraser, Mike, Dana and Mark. And we have a new patron, Jason. So Jason, thank you so much. Jason has pledged $3 a month. Welcome aboard. You can be cool like Jason and become a patron and support the show at patreon.com/OasisPod, which is where I post articles by myself and the wonderful contributors Richard and Kyle. A couple of other people have been in touch over the last month or so and have said that they'd also like to do some writing. More than happy to. If you fancy, if you're a bit of a writer and wanted to get your work published somewhere and get it in front of a few eyes, then feel free. Happy to throw it up on that Patreon page. Support at $3 per month or more qualifies you for your own bespoke song. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, just at Oasis Podcast. Email me oasispod@gmail.com. T-shirts are available at TeePublic. And please subscribe and review us on iTunes. It's the best way to get the podcast in front of more people and up the charts. As I said before, if you are around on Friday evening, UK time, then please get in touch on Twitter or on the email and we can maybe have a quick chat in our as you were review phone in. So that'll do it. As ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, stay young. And listen to your leaked copy of As You Were.
Records these days because these fucking smart asses download fucking tunes for niche. And they wonder why there's no real rock and roll stars around. Because this is the shit you got us doing, fuckers.